You're listening to KRFP, and this is Denise with Recovery Radio. And in the studio today, I have Tasha. Tasha, thank you so much for joining us today and being willing to tell us your story and share what's going on with life in recovery. Tasha, welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Tasha, if you wouldn't mind just telling the audience just a little bit about yourself, that would be great.
Okay. Well, my name's Tasha. I'm originally from Florida, and I am 3.5 years clean. And I'm a single mom, and I really believe that life and purpose is just kept me going over the last 3.5 years.
That's awesome. Tell us a little bit about what was going on before this 3.5 years, wherever you'd like to start.
Okay,
in
yeah.
That'd be great.
Okay, so let's see. I guess it really started when I was a kid, when I was younger. I believed a lie. I felt really rejected. Just growing up, like we were in like a rural section of town, and I really didn't have that many friends. And I felt like I was special, but I didn't really know how to put that. And with other people around me, it just really made me feel like I was rejected. I was the ugly duckling. And I think that really had the most to do with me falling into drug use and just losing myself in it.
So tell me a little bit more about as you were growing up. What was your teenage years in like your early 20s like?
Okay, so I'm still in my early 20s. No, yeah. Late 20s.
I know, right? Maybe better. But youth, maybe we better back it up. Why don't you pick what area you would like to...
So, let's see. I think we could start... Well, I was a skateboarder when I was like 14, 15, and 16, and I had a lot of physical injuries. And so with that, it spiked my area of just coping with those with hydros. Mm-hmm. And also like the party scene, I really enjoyed just getting out with friends and just living in that lifestyle of just partying all the time.
So you would say that you're very social?
Yes.
Being around people. And I'm just picturing in my mind Tasha like on a skateboard, you know, just out there having a great time tearing it up. It's just awesome. I'm sorry.
Yes. Yeah, that was my like place. That was my happy place. And and the parties and all that fun stuff that goes along with it that turns out to not be so fun. Yeah, growing up, I really used those to cope with just the rejection and just to have fun.
So at what age were you when you first started using hydros? Did you get a prescription or was this something that you, right, hydrocodones? Yes, to be specific, hydrocodones. When was the first time that you used those or were given a prescription for those?
I was 16 when I was given a prescription for those. And I used them as needed. And then I realized that they like masked all the pain, not just the physical pain, but like the mental.
So basically you had an injury, you went to the doctor, you got a prescription, and you're taking this prescription. And it's, of course, I'm assuming helping you physically for what had happened.
Yeah. Yeah. It was totally helping me physically.
And so explain to me what happened emotionally or how would you explain the side of it that you enjoyed?
I think just the numbness, like not having to deal with I had anger problems as a child. Mm-hmm. And so not having to really deal with them, it numbed all of my emotions. And so like I was working when I was 16, and it really helped me. Like I was really good at working. Like I could do more things than I normally could when I was using them. And it went from like getting one script to buying them on the streets. Mm-hmm. I had friends that were like, oh, we can get them for you if you need them. And that just like, it turned into constantly using them.
So also what I think I'm hearing you say is that productivity at work.
Yeah.
Was, how would you put that? You were able to work more?
I was able to work more. I was in a better mood, especially when I had them. Mm-hmm. And yeah, productivity for sure. I could do everything faster and better. And just, I felt like I was on point all the time.
Mm-hmm. And so was there a certain point where you started to, in your mind think, I wonder, is there a downside to this or any kind of concern that ever arose?
There was. Some of my friends at the time had said like, oh, there's people shooting up, and it was kind of like, and they're deep into it. And I just thought to myself, like, oh, I won't ever go that far. Like, that wouldn't be me. Like, I have this under control. Like, this is like, I have a job. Like, I'm young and I know what I'm doing. And like, eventually one day, like, I'll be able to start a family. And I have dreams. I just for right now, like, this is what I'm going to use to get by and to have fun. And then from there, I think it was like my whole life revolved around those pills. Like, I went from hydrocodones to oxycodones, and I got married when I was 18. Me and my husband, we sold them, and it was my life. Like, I was in the game. Like, it was a lifestyle. Like, and I enjoyed it. And I was like, this is who I was meant to be. Like, just rolling through and doing all the things and making money and not having to work like a legitimate job.
From an emotional standpoint of when you talked about being younger and about, you know, wanting people to like you or to think well of you, I guess it's kind of part of what I took. This part of your life where you were selling and providing this for people, were any of those wants from when you were a kid socially, or I'm not really sure how to word it, but were those being met while you were selling those?
Yes, I think they were, in a way, because I was the drug dealer. Mm-hmm. Like, I had friends, people called me all the time. I was wanted and I was needed. Mm-hmm. And even though I was using as well as selling them, I think that it did, like, it gave me like a high, like it gave me like a rush, and you don't know like what's going to happen next. And that's kind of like the mystery of it all. Like, it kind of made me feel, popular.
Okay, so let's go forward a little bit. You said you had gotten married at 18. Okay.
Yep.
What was kind of like the next moment that kind of strikes you looking back from when you were selling? I mean, was there a moment while you were selling that, I don't know, you started to think anything different, or there was anything tragic that happened?
Yeah, so definitely I think that, well, me and my husband were using together. And so looking back at it now, like I can see, like, I was almost upset that I had gotten married to him, because when I had seen like how far we had gone, we had sold our cars, like literally sold cars for pills, mm-hmm. to get high, like not even to get by, just to get by like for 2 days. And then selling everything. Like, I lived in an empty house with no electricity, mm-hmm. for probably about 3 months. We were together for 6 months total when I left him. Mm-hmm. And I was like, if you just keep doing what you're doing, you're going to go to prison, and I'm not going to be a part of that. And there was just something inside me, and I think it was God, that was like, you have something better inside you, and you have a purpose, and you're not doing it. And I didn't really know what to do, but except to leave. So I did. I left him 6 months after we got married, and but I kept using, and I stayed with different friends, and just kind of lived my life with that drug still ruling.
And so then, were you working at the time after you left your husband?
I'm
just trying to kind of get. So you leave. I'm just trying to get an idea.
Yeah.
So you leave, and you're living with friends.
Yeah. I had side jobs.
Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had went to school for hair. And graduated. Mm-hmm. And so I was a hairdresser, and so I was cutting hair on the side and just doing whatever I could to make it by. I think it was probably like a year after I had left him.
Because it's not like a judgment thing. I'm just thinking of those types of pain meds are extremely expensive from what I understand. And at the same time, though, in addiction, we don't always stay working.
Yeah.
You know, and so just trying to kind of get a picture of where things were next.
Yeah, I'm trying to draw a timeline in my, it's sometimes totally it gets understand. A little fuzzy. I'm like, yeah. I try not to think about it, but it's good mm-hmm. to think about, because I need to process it for sure. I worked until I was 19, and then I quit my job just because I was everywhere. Like, I couldn't keep a job. I was running late if I couldn't get the pill. Mm-hmm. And I would do whatever it took to get it. So I would just call out, and they eventually fired
me. And so I guess that's kind of what I'm asking, you're getting to what I'm thinking. And that is that, so you wake up in the morning,
mm-hmm.
and is that the first thing you're thinking about?
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's the only thing I'm thinking about. It's all like self-gratification. It's, when am I going to get my next pill? And if I don't have it before I go to bed, that's the very first thought in my mind. Like, how am I going to get the money, and how am I going to do it? And so I just really learned how to live the life of crime, I guess you would say, like mm-hmm. hustle whatever way I could mm-hmm. to get that pill. And it didn't really matter what it was. I stole.
What kind of hustles? Yeah.
Yeah. Weird. I would steal from Walmart and then return it at a different Walmart, counties out of the way. And and just, yeah, I would ask my parents for money, tell them that I need an electric bill paid. I would steal from my family. I would do whatever it took.
You got married and divorced and, or left.
Yeah.
And you're staying with friends and things are happening because you're trying to have the money to keep the habit going.
Yeah.
Or in your mind, just probably trying to survive.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's the next kind of point that happens here?
Yeah. I think the next thing was, I met a guy, mm-hmm. and he was a little bit older than me. So he had a home and property and stuff. And he was into partying and drinking. And I met him and I was like, we should be together. 'Cause I think that's a good idea. And it would keep my drug habit mm-hmm. going. And with that, I was still on OxyContin on a regular basis, or oxycodone on a regular basis. But I also was drinking a lot. And I started, I think it was my 20th birthday. It might have been a little bit before that, but I started using Molly. Molly had came out and it was booming. And I was like, oh, I want to try this. Like, and I think it was, I would do anything it took to take me out of reality. So it really didn't matter. I just wanted to escape reality at this point because I've already left my husband. Like, there's these failures,
right,
quote unquote,
yeah,
that I would think that were like piling up on my shoulders little by little. Like, I don't have a job. I've left my husband. Like, what do people think of me? And so, but I still wanted to party. I still wanted to have fun.
The weight of addiction is getting really heavy, probably, yeah, at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to go ahead and take a break, listen to a song, let Tasha get a drink of water. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. And we're listening to KRFP, Moscow Pullman.
Thank you.
by Devon Lewis, and you're listening to KRFP Moscow Pullman, and this is Denise with Recovery Radio, and today in the studio we have Tasha, and we've been talking about Tasha's youth and teenage years. When she was 16, she started taking hydrocodones, started out as a prescription, and then it turned into buying them, and just kind of picking up from, she was talking about meeting a new guy in, about how old were you then, Tasha?
I think I was around 20 years old.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So with this new guy, he had a friend and we would hang out. She was a meth addict and I knew that, but she sold me some pills and we got along really well. Mm-hmm. She was like my style of girl. And we were hanging out one day, and I think this is probably where my introduction to using meth really starts, is after about 2 months of, I was using hydroponic mushrooms, just partying a whole lot, and I was 2 months straight, just constant. I was working at a dog kennel, and I was holding it down pretty well with my addiction, keeping everything pretty secure, and I was looking for pills one day before work, and I met this guy. He said, I have pills all the time. Why don't you just get my number, and you can call me whenever, and I'll hook you up. And so I was like, okay, this is awesome. Well, he also was using meth, and probably about 3 weeks after buying pills from him on a regular basis, just to keep everything level in my life, nobody had any pills. I couldn't find them anywhere. And he had offered me meth. And I was really hesitant. but I was really desperate. And so I was like, okay, if this isn't as physically addicting.
So basically, they're your coping mechanism wasn't mm-hmm. available, your typical one
or yeah.
ones wasn't available, and so at that point something else was offered to you.
Yeah.
Were you like a little scared about this?
I was, from being on drugs for, I guess that would be like 5 years into it on a regular basis, just using them. I'd pretty much used everything in the book mm-hmm. except for acid, so I was like okay with everything, and I'd always told myself everything except for meth. I'll never use meth. And from my friend that had introduced me to this guy, I was like, I've seen the heartbreak. Like I've seen her go up and down, and it broke my heart. I'm like, I don't ever want to touch that.
So what do you think, thinking back on it, what were the things in your mind that were making you go against the previous thought of this is dangerous?
I think just the survival, just needing, like in my mind, I needed something. Mm. I was desperate.
Okay. So there's that point where you just, it
didn't matter.
It's desperate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It didn't matter what it was anymore, as long as it got me through. Mm-hmm. And I used, and that night I went to work and I came back. I called him up. I was like, can I come back over? Now I know why everybody's on it. I want more. And I think from there, it's just, I loved it. I was like, this is amazing. I don't ever want to stop. And there is a difference, like from using meth than using pills. Like with pills, not that you're any better, but you can regulate it a little bit more, and you can function a little bit better in society.
So what were the things that you started to notice as you're using methamphetamines? I'm not sure how much time passed,
yeah.
you know, before you started noticing, but what did you start to notice as being some questionable things about your actions or thoughts or just life, job, yeah. anything?
Well, I think first, I lied all the time. Like instead of just like little white lies that I thought were okay, I would make up stories to anybody and everyone of why I didn't show up. I had a house cleaning business at this point. Mm-hmm. And I also drove a tow truck part-time and worked at the dog kennel. And at the dog kennel, I ended up, I think it was only like 3 weeks into using the meth, that I realized I can't do this. Like I wasn't sleeping, so I couldn't give these dogs the care. And I'm an animal lover, so I really felt guilty. I was like, and I told my boss, I was like, I'm going through some hard times in life and I'm gonna have to quit my job. Mm-hmm. And so I quit that job and I was still doing the house cleaning, but I wasn't consistent with anything. I was running wild, and I probably went 2 weeks without sleeping, like the first 2 weeks I used. And so it really just, I was out there. I was lost in it. And I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. Mm-hmm. But I had to let go of almost everyone I was cleaning house for. I think there was two people that I held on to mm-hmm. that were like, we love you. We want you to keep cleaning our house. And they were friends already.
Sure. During this time of using meth, was there anyone in your life that was sober and clean that came to you and said, Tasha, I'm concerned? I mean, was there anyone that you spoke to outside of maybe those two people that you still clean for? Anyone coming around with concerns?
There was the one family that I had cleaned for. They knew about my pill addiction. They didn't know I was using meth. And they supported me and loved me. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think they knew how to reach me. But there sure. was one person that did, was my friend that had introduced me to the man that gave it to me, which actually is my son's father. She looked at me one day after I don't know how many months I was already into it. And she was like, Tasha, she's like, you're better than this. This isn't the life you deserve. And she was like, you know, trying to like show, she was like, you're strong. You're beautiful. Like you can do anything. And she really just spoke life into me. But at that point, I couldn't hear it, but she loved me. And I knew that she had loved me mm-hmm. and I really felt it. I was like, okay, like I accepted it. I just didn't know what to do with it. And I just kept using.
So let me ask you a question. So that moment when that lady talks to you, mm-hmm. I mean, it sounded like a really heartfelt situation.
Yeah.
Her words to you, and maybe like you're saying, you didn't know what to do with it then. In the future, Tasha, do you ever remember that conversation? Did you ever pull strength from that?
Yeah, I totally did. Yes. So we could like fast forward a little bit. I ended up getting arrested and I was admitted to the psych ward. I had been using meth for probably consecutively at least 10 months. And I was just out of my mind. I couldn't control myself. I was going to people's houses and just like starting like ruckus. And they had put me in the psych ward. And when I was in there, I was just like brain dead. It was like I wasn't even there anymore. And I'd prayed and I was like, God, if you're real, you gotta help me. Like I was desperate. Like I was literally on my knees in the little room that they put you in, and it's just like cold and you don't even know what's going on. And I prayed, and at that moment, like I felt a peace come on me, and like I remembered that talk that we had, and I was like, I do have a purpose, like I do have a destiny. I just didn't really know what it was, but I held on to that little nugget of truth of who I believed I was mm-hmm. and who I am to get me out of there. 3 months after I had gotten out of the psych ward, I had gotten arrested. And then I was like, everything just kind of went downhill so fast. Like it was just like one thing after another, the snowball was there. Mm-hmm. And while I was in jail there, it was in Georgia. I had once again gave another like a prayer out to God, like a cry, like if you get me out of here, like I'll change. Like I know, like from the beginning, like from when I was a little kid, like I want a family, I want kids. And my boyfriend at the time, I had left my previous boyfriend that I was with, and I had been dating the guy that had given me the meth, which ends up being my son's dad, his Bones, we called him Bones. And so I think that
it's okay. We're
yeah.
Gonna just, we're going to take a break because
okay.
some things can just be so emotional that we start to talk about things from the past and we need a break.
Okay.
Thank you, Tasha.
You.
We'll be back. This is KRFP.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither wildly as they slip away across the universe. Pools of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my opened mind, possessing and caressing me. Dance before for me like a million eyes. They call me on and on across the universe. Float me under like a restless wind inside a letterbox. They tumble blindly as they make their way across the universe. Suns, it calls me on and on across the universe.
And you're listening to KRFP Moscow Pullman, and this is Denise with Recovery Radio. And we are in the studio today with Tasha. Tasha, thank you for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
And we're going to try to kind of pick back up where we were.
Okay, yeah.
So let's see. When we before we left the break, we were talking about, let's see, so you had used meth, and let's jump forward to where we're going to go the next subject here.
Okay, yeah, perfect. So okay. I got out of jail, sent that prayer out that I wanted to live right.
Right.
And I got out of jail, thought I was going to do good, had big hopes for myself, started using again. And this time I started using intravenously completely. I think that took me to the deepest that I was. I found out I was pregnant 3 months after I kept using my whole pregnancy, just knowing that there had to be something better. I just didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. And so 9 months later, I gave birth to a perfectly healthy miracle baby. And my son was just born perfect. I had used meth the night before. I was really deep into it. And but I just didn't know how to get out. But God knew how to get me out of there. So he gave me this son who was born without meth in his system. And I had it in my system. So there were some complications mm-hmm. there. I got to take him home with me. Mm-hmm. And I think probably a month, he wasn't even a month old, I had gotten pulled over again mm-hmm. and had meth on me. Mm-hmm. They took me to jail. They put him in foster care. And I spent the next 9 months after just really not knowing what to do. But CPS was involved, which mm-hmm. was a great, great thing. I was put into drug court in Florida. Mm-hmm. I didn't have stable housing. I didn't have a car. I didn't have a phone. Mm-hmm. I didn't have a job. But I knew that I was on the right track. And it felt like the next 9 months, I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what to do. But I know there's a better life. And I know I want my son to be in it. Mm-hmm. And I think at this point, like, instead of people wanting the people that I was surrounded with that in my addiction, instead of them wanting me to keep using with with them, they pushed me away, which was amazing. Mm-hmm. They put most of them that were like truly, I think, friends. I still love them. They pushed me away. And
what a blessing.
It really was. It really was.
Sorry, I have to interject and just say, really, what a blessing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. There was, I never really stayed clean, but there was 2 weeks I would be clean and then I would use. And then 2 more weeks would go by and I was, and then I would use. And so it was, I wanted to be clean. Like I could see there was a light. It was really, really distant, mm-hmm. but I knew it was there and I wanted it more than anything. And now that I have like this beautiful little man that I could raise, like, which is my dream. Like I'm like, all I want was a boy. And, and so it gave me hope. And I really, my son's dad, he looked at me one day and he was like, Tasha, he's like, if you keep using, I think I was high. He knew I was high. He's like, you got to get out of here. He's like, you can't live here anymore. He's like, you're going to take care of our son and you're going to raise him up right. And you're a great woman and you're a great mom. And if anyone can do it, you can do it. And he like spoke so much life into me. Mm-hmm. And I think that just like, I still think about that till this day. There's days where I'm like, I can't do this anymore. Right. And I remember that. And I'm like, yeah, I was born for this.
The things loved ones say. Yeah. Sticks with us. That's awesome.
Yeah. And so through all this, I felt like I had my eyes closed. I was walking and I was just hearing the voices. And I'm like, just the next right thing, the next right thing. So the courts all were in favor of me getting my son back. And so my parents had moved to Moscow, Idaho about a year earlier. And so I had asked them when the custody case first opened if there was any chance I could transfer everything from Florida to Idaho. And so it was open, but it was never a for sure thing. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think God's hand was once again in my life, where like literally within the matter of like probably a month of just court dates every week, mm-hmm. they had granted me unsupervised visitation with my son, and they allowed me to move out to Moscow, Idaho.
That's amazing. So are you in the middle of a program when you moved, or were you done the program?
So I'd never finished the mm-hmm. drug court program. Mm-hmm. I had still, I had a case plan from mm-hmm. CPS, and so drug court was in the program, was like I had to complete that along with a lot of other things like having a job and having stable housing. And so when I moved to Moscow, the first thing I did was try to apply for drug court, which you can't do unless you're court ordered. Right. And so since they had kind of kicked me out, I guess you would say, I went to Weeks and Vitree, and they had given me all of the same treatment plan that I would have if I was in drug court. Mm-hmm. And so instead of it being like court ordered, it was me ordered.
So you volunteer to do the right thing. Excellent.
Yes.
Oh, and can you tell us about Weeks and Vitree, please?
Okay. So Weeks and Vitree, I think it's like a treatment center. Mm-hmm. They had sent me there to take classes, different classes. They give me, I think I had to take a UA, a drug test, mm-hmm. every 3 times a week. Mm-hmm. And then they also like offered me classes, all the classes that I needed to complete the drug court for the CPS to grant me custody back of my son.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it was awesome. Like I loved being there. And I think being there was definitely a switch in my mind. There was a point in time when I remember getting out of one of the classes and I was pretty like probably halfway done with it, mm-hmm. with most of the classes. And I heard a bunch of people talking and they're like, when I get off the drug court, I'm going to go do this. I can't wait to like go like use again or go be able to party again. And I remember there was a click in my brain and I was like, I've just done all this hard work. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. And I remember like it was where I was standing. It was like you could either be standing in the grass or on the pavement. And I remember backing up and walking on that pavement and being like, no, I'm in this for life. Like if I'm going to do all this hard work, like it has to be for something. Mm-hmm. And that was definitely like a moment where I was like, okay, I'm in it. Like I'm in recovery. This is my thing.
Can you give me just a couple of examples of some of the changes that you made while you were, I mean, before that, I mean, you were talking about there's a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
So
much hard work. I think a lot of it had to, like, I had to have a job. And so as soon as I moved here, I had applied for the Arby's in town and I got in the job. So I was working. And I think really keeping my mind focused on just doing one thing at a time. Like, and like when they, you say just for today, like I was like, just for this minute. Mm-hmm. Like there was times where I was, were like just for this hour. And I think really keeping myself focused and plugged into like community and keeping like my original dream alive, which was just is to like affect people and to love people. Like I remember being like probably 12 or 13 and writing like in my journal as a kid, like I want to go to Africa and I want to love people and I just want to share love everywhere. And like, this is my dream and my desire. Like this was what I was born to do. And like not really ever being able to effectively do that because of my lifestyle choices and because of the addiction, because I was so deep into it. And I think having that, like having a dream and having a focus and being able to like put words to it and say, this is who I want to be. And having like just daily goals and then weekly goals. And I know that like through the classes I took, since they were a voluntary, I also like put myself in other things like Celebrate Recovery. I did that. And there was points in that where I was like, okay, I think I'm like understanding like this is like a complete shift in like my life, like in the direction that I want to go. Yeah, it, a lot, so much hard work. Like, I don't even know how I did it. Like, seriously, I like think back on it and I'm like, whoa, like that's a, it's a miracle that I'm even alive in here, let alone like I'm going on 3.5 years clean. Like I'll be 4 years clean in June.
It's like all that effort and energy and you put it in this other direction.
Yeah.
And moved in a positive direction. And yeah. Have you met new people since you've lived in Idaho?
Yes. So many new people. Oh my goodness. Yeah. I think like the community like that you build around yourself is so important. Like I know that just the people, places and things is always like really in recovery, like you have to change those. And I think like as an individual, like I get to like, I'm on this journey, like I'm on this like destiny path, and like I get to choose who I want to be around and really putting myself in the middle of them and walking and being vulnerable and like sharing like where I'm at. Like, I know that there was, like, being a single mom, there was, I could plug in to the single moms. Mm-hmm. And there was a couple of them, like, my one of my best friends, Callie, who really took me in. And she was, like, she's not from the dope culture. But she took me in and she was, like, I'm going to love you. And you're just going to learn how to be a mom. And you're going to learn how to do all these things. And just, like, walked alongside of me and really kept me solid in, like, being a mom and raising my son. And then I also had all of my recovery friends that really kept me going and keep me going. Like I'm not done. I'm not gonna be done until I die.
Love it. Like love and support. And
yeah.
That's awesome.
So much. Yeah.
Well, thank you, Tasha. We're gonna take a quick break. Okay. This is Denise with Recovery Radio. That's Eminence Front by The Who. And you're listening to Recovery Radio with Denise. And Tasha's in the studio here with us. And we are in the part of the interview where she is living here in Moscow and doing well in recovery. She's finished treatment. She has her son back. And things are going good.
Yeah.
Got a job. And we just have a few more minutes left. Tasha, what else would you like to share with the audience?
Okay. So I think that, like, I want to point out that people in recovery are the most amazing people, because if we've went like through heights and depths to get like just like a little nugget of dope or like whatever drug you're on, like what else can you do when you focus your energy in the opposite direction? And then also I want to just touch on the fact that recently I've really been learning to like go back into my past and forgive myself and to love myself through it and just accept it for who I was. I know that it is one day at a time and it's one step at a time, and just going through that, and after like you've gotten a goal and like hit it, I think that it's really important, like for me to just turn around and be like, okay, like I was this person mm-hmm. at this point in time, and just really love and accept myself. I remember somebody was like, once a junkie, always a junkie. But I'm like, you can be a junkie for whatever. Like you can focus it in a different light, in a different way. And just really keeping, like, I think number one thing, keeping yourself in community and surrounding yourself with people. I have like mirror families, people that I would want to be when I grow up.
I like that word, mirror families.
Yeah.
That's an awesome word. I'm surprised I haven't heard it, but I love it. That's
great. Yeah, and just like keeping myself, I have three families that I home church with on Sunday nights, and they're really, they're people that I want to be like when I grow up, and we live life together, and I look at them as like a mirror, and I'm like, you know, and when you look in a mirror, like you see things that you like and things that you don't like, and you get to pick and choose, and it's like, you know, I'm walking on this journey with my son, and just really excited to see like what God has next for us, but also like keeping myself surrounded with like mm-hmm. just people that love me and support me, and being able to do the love and support the next people in line mm-hmm. and being able to be that loving voice that wasn't necessarily always there for me when I was in my dark places, for other people that are in their dark places, and seeing other people that are like obviously in addiction, just and loving them and like not, and seeing them for who they really truly are, because we're all designed with like a purpose, and seeing that and loving them through it.
Absolutely. Sounds like there's been a lot of positive things. You've turned this around to be able to help people in your community and just keep going. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So happy. So proud of you. Oh, and there is one more thing that I think maybe Tasha would like to share. Would you like to share that, Tasha?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, here we go.
Okay. Yeah. So, and also, I definitely feel like God's leading us in a new direction. And so like this spring, we're going to be leaving and going to Missoula, Montana, and just sharing life and love with everyone that we meet out there. And I don't know if it's just going to be for like the summer season, like spring and summer, or how long we'll be there. But I'm really excited to be able to take what I've learned like for the last 3.5 years here and be able to bring it to another town and just spread that love and spread the energy like...
I'm excited for you.
Yeah.
I'm excited for Missoula. Lucky yes. them. Thank you so much, Tasha, for being here with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
This is Denise's Recovery Radio.